Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you this week to this week's weekly podcast. How many times can you say week in one sentence? This week, I want to conclude our five-part series on our new heart groups, which are modeled after the function and form of New Testament ecclesia. It still amazes me how deeply the nature of the New Testament church has been buried under 1,700 years of religious tradition. But this week I'm going to try and strike some middle ground between institutional church and the New Testament's more organic gatherings, something that both institution and organic gatherings have, or should have rather, in common is a strong sense of other-centered mission. And this is rooted in the actual example that Jesus gave in his own life, where in Mark 10 he is recorded as having said, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." I've had some of the best conversations with our various heart group coaches over these first 2 months, and one thing that comes out loud and clear each time, and it's in perfect harmony with the New Testament ecclesia, is that heart groups should also have a strong sense of mission. And I want to be clear, though, this is not the typical emphasis on evangelism that we find in so much of the evangelical Christianity of today. Evangelism is not the goal of our mission focus. Evangelism is the means to reach our goal, and I'll explain more about that in a moment. But turning people into mere believers was never the end goal. You can see this in Matthew 28, 8 through 20. Helping others within the community become followers of Jesus and his teaching was. Ever since the 4th century, with the baptism of Constantine, we've witnessed a decisive shift and what I call a successive drift away from the teachings of Jesus to beliefs about Jesus as that which defines what a Christian is. Let me repeat that so you can really grasp what I'm saying here. We've seen a drift away from the teachings of Jesus defining what a Christian is to simply beliefs about Jesus defining what a Christian is. And praise God again for the few exceptions, but to a large degree in our current culture, being a Christian simply means someone who holds certain beliefs about Jesus, and very rarely do those who call themselves Christians actually resemble the person or the teachings of Jesus. Statistics today prove that although the worldview of those who believe in Jesus is different, the life of a person who sees himself or herself as a believer in most cases, and again, there are a few exceptions, in most cases, their life is no different in reality, except for attending a few weekly services, from those who are labeled as unbelievers. Christians are just as prone to gluttony as non-Christians. Christians are just as prone to greed as non-Christians. Christians are just as prone to materialism as non-Christians. Christians are actually more prone to violence than non-Christians, and Christians are more prone to pride and arrogance than non-Christians. And today, the divorce rate among Christians is for the first time in history higher than the divorce rate of non-Christians. How did we get here? I believe, once again, it began in the 4th century, actually probably a little earlier, but the 4th century is close enough for what we're going to be talking about this week. What took place in the 4th century was those who bore the name of Christ, they made a clean break with the actual teachings of Jesus. Those who called themselves Christians actually chose an ethic that marginalized Jesus and his teachings. Up to this time, what defined whether a community was following Jesus or not was whether that community sought to follow the ethical teachings of Jesus. But once those ethics, and we talked about this earlier this year, nonviolence was one of the key Christo ethics that were abandoned. Once those ethics were abandoned overnight, everyone in Europe became a Christian, literally. One of the fruits of focusing now on beliefs about Jesus rather than the teachings of Jesus was that Christianity became a hybrid of institutionalism and individualism, the clergy versus laity, so to speak. And what determined whether a person was a Christian or not was no longer reflected in a set of principles by which a group sought to live their lives, but rather by a set of intellectual beliefs, their theology, so to speak, to which an individual person intellectually subscribed or not. A great example of this, and I didn't put this in this week's e-site, but it'll be in this podcast, I just now thought of it, is in the actual, what's labeled the Apostles' Creed itself. It talks about the virgin birth and then skips straight over. Go back and read the Apostles' Creed. Google it if you don't have a resource to be able to read it. But it goes from the virgin birth and jumps all the way to his death, burial, and resurrection. It skips entirely the life of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus. What defined Christianity or what a Christian was basically that you believe in the virgin birth, you believe certain things about his death, you believe certain things about his divinity. But the ethical teachings were lost. This epidemic remains with us today. Today we see a religion that to a large degree is still using runaround logic to find ways to avoid applying the actual teachings of Jesus. And in those teachings' place, we find division on top of division over beliefs about Jesus that define us. All the while, well, we're arguing about what we should believe or what we shouldn't. The world at large, all around us, is starving, both spiritually and physically. Today, we still witness a strong marginalization of the actual teachings of Jesus, followed by a community accompanied by a heavy emphasis on doctrinal beliefs about Jesus instead. An example of this, too, especially during this time of year that's just upon us, is that as Christians today, we can live lives of consumer-driven materialism in our American culture, which is a direct abandonment of the teachings of Jesus. But if you question the virgin birth for a moment, a belief about Jesus that's actually in only two of the four versions of the Jesus story that we have, you're no longer considered a believer. Now, don't misunderstand me this week. Believing the right things about God is of vital importance. I really believe that. It's important for every one of us. But stop for a moment and consider whether believing the right thing about God is the ultimate end or whether it's the means whereby we experience God's ultimate end for us. Pay close attention to Jesus' words in John 17. Jesus is reported as saying this, "Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you've sent me, and I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love that you have for me may be in them, and that I myself may be in them." We can gather 3 points from Jesus' statement here. Number one, revealing the truth about God's character for Jesus was in order that an ultimate goal might be accomplished. Number two, what was that goal? Well, there were two goals. Let's talk about the first one here, and then we'll talk about the next one in number three. First, it was so that the love of God might be restored in us. In short, if our picture of God doesn't also change us into more loving people, then no matter how correct we may be in our beliefs about God, we simply, according to 1 Corinthians 13, become resounding gongs, clanging cymbals, empty nothings, gaining nothing. And I want you to also notice in Jesus' words the word them. Jesus never called upon his disciples to follow him all on their own, but to do so in an authentic community of fellow followers. The love that he wants to recreate in us is in just that location. It's in us. Not in you, not in me, in us together. This love can't be experienced flying solo, so to speak. Other-centered love requires experiencing life with others in addition to ourselves. But even in saying all of this, even these groups of Jesus followers in the first century following Jesus together, they were not only to strengthen and instruct and encourage and to build each other up, as we've covered in the previous parts to this series. These groups themselves, as a united whole, they were to have an outside of the group focus. Together, they were to live communal lives that were radically self-sacrificial for the blessing and benefit of others, putting on display the beauty of God's other-centered love to the world around them. And number three, goal number two was that, notice Jesus' words, that I myself may dwell in them. we find them here again, now also as a dwelling place for Jesus himself. We've been guilty of reading this statement through the lens of our Western individualistic culture. Jesus was not praying that he would be able to dwell in his followers individually or uniquely as isolated little dwelling places, plural. Jesus wants to take the plurality of individuals and by restoring love among them through the revelation of the character of God, he wants to take this plurality and turn it into a singular community that becomes the home or the dwelling place of Jesus himself. The group is the place Jesus desires to dwell. Let me illustrate this with a metaphor used by Peter. Peter uses the imagery of taking living stones and assembling them together to become a living house or a dwelling place for God. This is from 1 Peter 2:4-5. As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by human beings, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house, a God-breathed house, to be a holy priesthood offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Let's get back to my statements earlier about evangelism. Evangelism, according to the New Testament, is simply telling the Jesus story, the gospel. There were four versions of it. There were Matthew's, there were Mark's, there was Luke's, and there was John's. And those who embraced the Jesus of this story would find new life born within them. It was as if they had passed from death to life, and they were no longer a dead stone. They had now become a living stone. But then an apostle would take those living stones and put them together in such a way that they fitted together properly and would become an actual living house built out of these living stones. It wasn't enough just to bring someone from death to life. They must, in being brought to life, now be connected with a community marked by an open, mutually participatory communal nature that not only reflected the other-centered, self-sacrificial love of God, but thereby put on display to the world around them the beauty of this love for all to see. And I know this is a far cry from what history records has happened by the institutionalizing of a religion that today we call Christianity. But what this simply reveals is that what today is called Christianity might be the furthest thing from what Jesus intended his followers to become. Today we embrace beliefs about Jesus as individuals. And even when we come together in such a way as to maintain our isolation from each other. The historical purpose for which pews themselves were actually invented in the 16th century was to keep people from interacting with each other and to keep their focus towards the front. We gather together as isolated individuals to what we call participate, which many times just simply means remaining quiet and listening, in a program centered around the moment where we passively listen to a discourse with a heavy emphasis on doctrines about Jesus rather than the ethical teachings of Jesus. Jesus spent precious little time addressing people's doctrinal beliefs. Jesus spent a large portion of time revealing to us the truth about the Father's character by giving teachings on how his followers should live. Even in the songs we sing, you see this individualistic tendency. The lyrics are too often marked by the pronouns of I or me versus we or us. You find this both in older hymns and in recent contemporary worship songs alike, which only further reveals how far we've drifted. Again, these are generalizations of what we find on the whole. There are beautiful exceptions out there to this that I've witnessed, but to a large degree, these exceptions are just that. They're exceptions to the overly common rule. And this leads me to the point of this week's eSight regarding heart groups and mission and an honest confession of failure on the part of myself and the ministry of Renewed Heart Ministries in the past. As a ministry and as the director of this ministry, I've become convinced that it's not enough to simply uplift the truth about our Heavenly Father as it's revealed in Jesus and then leave those who have embraced this new picture of God in passive isolation. It's as if we've traversed the globe, turning dead stones into living stones, and then we've just left them strewn across the field, each alone and lying there. These living stones must be assembled together in such a way that they together become a dwelling place for Jesus himself. This is the reason we at Renewed Heart Ministries have added to our ministry what we are now affectionately referring to as heart groups. Each one of these, or this ministry in general, rather, is equipped with insightful coaches to help those who feel more like isolated stones, to help them assemble together in a meaningful way to experience God and His love for us, and to put on display to the world around us the beauty of who God is together. Now, some of you may be out there objecting, saying, but Herb, those who embrace your teachings are usually connected somehow to a local church. And yes, that is true in a contemporarily defined sense. And I want to be clear, there's nothing wrong with going to church, in my opinion, even as church has grown to be defined by us today. I speak in a different institutionalized church around the globe almost every weekend. But I want you to hear me when I say this. No matter how faithful one may be in his or her church attendance, one can attend what we in our culture call church 7 days a week and still never experience or encounter the reality of what the New Testament referred to as the church. Within New Testament ecclesia, a building is no longer the temple. The open, mutual, participatory gathering of followers is now where God dwells among us, putting on display through this group the beauty of who He really is. You can find this in John 1:14 and 1 Peter 2:5. Churches were not buildings in the New Testament. Number two, an animal on an altar is no longer the sacrifice. The common life of believers, together following the teachings of Jesus with their lives, lived out in self-sacrificial love, is now the living sacrifice. You can see this in Romans 12, verse 1 and 1 Peter 2:5 again. Gatherings were not centered around a sacrifice, a sacrament, or a sermon in the New Testament. A hierarchical male authority figure filling an office is no longer a priest, a rabbi, or teacher, but rather we as followers of Jesus and members of His kingdom have together become a priesthood or even a priestesshood of all believers alike. You can find this in Matthew 23:8-12 and 1 Peter 2:5 again. All believers alike themselves were what we call today pastors. And any leadership that did exist, whether it be apostles, prophets, evangelists, elders, or teachers, this leadership was marked by servanthood, serving the larger, mutually participatory group in contrast to hierarchical authority. You can find this in Luke 22:25-27. In the New Testament, temple, sacrifice, and priest have been transformed by the coming of Jesus, making what these three were in the past obsolete, being replaced by something far superior. And to find backing for that, you can read the entire epistle to the Hebrews. That's what that book was about. What does all this have to do, though, with heart groups and mission? In perfect harmony with New Testament ecclesia, heart groups also have a strong mission focus. What is their mission? It's not to go to church, but to be the church by putting on display the radical, other-centered, self-sacrificial love of God as revealed in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, reincarnated again as Christ's body in visible form is still present here with us for all to continue to see. If you're already meeting in a heart group and you feel your group is in need of a more other-centered focus, this week I want to challenge you not to just merely meet to encourage, instruct, and bless one another, although this too is vital and should not be belittled. Also this week, spend some time prayerfully in submitted brainstorming, considering how your group can possibly make a difference in the community around you. At bare minimum, find someone in your area who's in need and pull your resources together to make a difference in that person's life. Jesus didn't go around trying to get people ready to go to heaven when they died. On the contrary, Jesus went around doing good, setting captives free, making a difference in this age, creating change for the better in people's lives now, and then announcing His kingdom had come. This is our mission too, to enlarge His kingdom, not merely by turning people into believers who believe differently about certain topics. Once those stones are alive, we are called to assemble those stones together in a way that becomes a dwelling place for God Himself, incarnate once again, a living demonstration, putting on display the beauty of God's character of love, once revealed in Jesus Christ, and now revealed through his visible embodiment for the world around us to see. That's why in Ephesians 4:16 we're called his body. If you're currently not part of a heart group and you would like more information on either participating in a group or even hosting a group, please contact us on our website at renewedheartministries.com/heartgroups.aspx, or you can just go to renewedheartministries.com and click on the heart links link there in the menu. As always, this week, keep living in love, loving like Christ, and together in community, let's go enlarge the kingdom. This marks the end of this series. Next week, we're going to begin with a special series based on the Jesus story, which I believe will prove especially relevant during the upcoming holiday season. Once again, I love you guys. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.